Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our second AIDS.gov conference call. I'm Miguel Gomez. I'm the director of AIDS.gov, and I want to thank you for joining today's call. As many of you may know, at AIDS.gov, we work to help Internet users easily find information on federal HIV/AIDS programs and resources, but we also blog each week on how to use new media in the fight against HIV/AIDS. And we've twice this year had the opportunity to blog on text messaging, and we've heard back from a lot of our HIV colleagues about their interest about using text messaging in the fight against HIV/AIDS. We also heard from a lot of our colleagues that they really wanted some of the basic information about texting and how it's being used in the fight against HIV/AIDS. So we wanted to hold today's informational call, which overwhelmingly is for our federal colleagues who work with our grantee community across the United States. And it's really important to us to focus on text messaging, especially here in the United States, when in 2007 there were close to 250 million Americans with cell phones, and the bulk of those cell phones had text messaging features. So today we'll provide you with that basic introduction to text messaging. First, you know, what is it? How does it work? Why is it an important tool overall? And how it can help in the fight against HIV/AIDS. So some of this might be basic for you, but we're really excited about getting into the meat of what people are doing on the ground to make a difference. We'll highlight two text messaging campaigns, including Sex Info and the Know It campaign, and we'll also want this to be a dialogue, so we'll take questions twice during today's call. To help us talk on the issue today, we have from the state of Michigan, Rick Baroda. He's a technology expert and a frequent blogger for CNET, and joining Rick is Deb Levine in California. She's the executive director and founder of the Internet Sexuality Information Services, ISIS. Through ISIS, she has developed, we're quite proud of, several youth-focused text messaging campaigns about sexual health. But most importantly, I have an obligation to let everyone on the call know that this call is being recorded, and a transcript and audio file of this call will be made available after the call, and we'll also be sending everyone an evaluation, and we please encourage you to fill that out so we do a better job next time. So I want us to get started, and I'm going to turn to Rick. And Rick, thank you so much for joining us today. We know that you've been writing about technology for over 15 years. Congratulations, sir. So we're pleased that you can sort of give us some of the basics. And we'd like to get some quick answers to some basic questions like, sir, what is text messaging?
Well, sure. Let me answer that for you, Miguel. To many people, text messaging probably seems kind of confusing, like one of those strange and complicated activities that only teenagers understand. But in reality, it's one more great tool in your communications arsenal, right up there with email. In fact, text messaging is very much like email, but a specialized kind designed for cell phones. And it relies on a technology that's actually been built into cell phones for years. And this is called SMS, which is short for Short Message Service. And this is used to relay very brief messages, usually no more than 160 characters or the equivalent of a couple average length sentences.
Well, sir, why is it an important tool?
Well, that's a great question, and many people might wonder why you'd want to bother with such a seemingly limited method of communication. One big reason is that text messages arrive almost immediately after being sent. So one reason that BlackBerry users, for instance, love their devices so much is that email arrives on its own. They don't have to manually sign in and retrieve it. And it's a similar story with text messages. They get delivered to your phone automatically and almost instantaneously. So that can come in really handy when you need to reach someone who's, say, in a meeting and not able to answer their phone. Instead of calling, you can send them a text message. It'll pop up on the person's screen without disturbing the meeting, and he or she can fire off a quick answer if necessary, again with little or no disruption.
Sure. Thank you, Rick. What else can you do with texting?
Well, let me answer that for you, Miguel. In a nutshell, text messaging allows people to send and receive short messages on their cell phones, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg. The technology is now being used for a lot more than just two-way interpersonal communication. So, for example, you can use short message service, or SMS, to check the status of an airline flight. You can use it to track the shipping status of a package. And you can use it to find the nearest HIV test center and even get driving directions to it. All of this and more is possible thanks to various services that leverage this SMS technology. And really, best of all, most of them are free.
You mentioned free, but are there costs associated with text messaging?
Well, sure. Let's talk about that before we actually get into the services themselves. SMS prices do vary depending on your cell phone carrier and your service plan. So your plan might include a fixed number of messages per month. It might include an unlimited number, or it may have none at all. If you're not sure what's included with your plan, what you really want to do is call your customer service, your carrier's customer service department, and they'll be able to tell you what you've got coming to you.
Thank you. Just another question is, how do you create a text message actually on your cell phone?
That's one I actually get quite a lot, Miguel, and I'm sure at this point some listeners may be wondering how they're supposed to compose a message when their phone has only a numeric keypad. Obviously, smartphones that have those little QWERTY keyboards have the edge when it comes to messaging, but it is possible to enter text using only those 9 number keys. It just takes longer, and it takes a bit of practice. Basically, each number represents 3 or 4 letters, and you can see the letters printed right on your phone keypad. You push a given key repeatedly until the desired letter appears on screen, then move on to the next letter. That's the process in a nutshell. You'll want to refer to your phone's manual to learn more, or find yourself the nearest teenager.
Thank you, sir. And Rick, it is so important because I often talk about texting, and I'll talk later about the NOAA campaign to help people use text messaging to find an HIV testing site, which you referenced. But again, we sometimes forget that we have to start with the basics with our colleagues to be able to understand this very practical and wonderful tool. And what I would like to do is, as I mentioned earlier, during this call we're going to be able to take questions. I'm going to ask the operator to explain to our listeners how they can ask a question.
Thank you. If anybody does have questions, they may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Again, that'll be star 1 for any questions.
And again, later in I'll turn to Deb Levine from ISIS shortly, but Rick, before I let you go and see if there's any questions for you, are there some other uses, some other examples you can give us that are helpful tools when it comes to text messaging?
Absolutely, Miguel. Let's talk about some of the free services that you can tap into from your phone, any phone, using nothing more than a text message. So for example, if you're trying to lose weight, a service called diet.com can actually help you count calories. And what you would do is create a new text message with the name of a restaurant and menu item, then send it to DIET1, which is equivalent to 34381 on your keypad. And in a matter of seconds, diet.com will send back a message listing the calories, fat content, protein content, and so on. Now, if you're looking for driving directions, flight status, movie show times, and other information, Google has its own SMS service that's really incredible. And if you visit google.com/SMS on your PC, you can get all the details on that.
And thank you. And we'll send all this information out to our listeners. And I want to ask Sean, the operator, if there's any questions before moving on to Ms. Levine.
I show no questions at this time.
Great. Thank you, Sean. So let's welcome Deb Levine from ISIS. And Rick, thanks you for joining us as we turn to Deb. And Deb, again, we want to thank you for the work that you've done in disease prevention. And we want just to jump into it, and if you could explain the program that you've been working on, Sex Info, could you explain what it is and how it works, ma'am?
Of course I can, and I want to back up to say, Rick, that was the best introduction and explanation of text messaging I've ever heard. I've been trying to do it for about 3 years now, so I still have a lot to learn. Sex Info was we started it in 2006 in San Francisco, and it's a very simple SMS text messaging service designed to reach urban low-income youth with basic information about sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV, and clinic and local clinic resources. The way that the service works is that you text sex info to a 5-digit short code, which is 61827, and I always say at this point in the call, I have no problem if people take out their cell phones and try it. And you get back a menu of 5 commonly asked questions by young people, including if you want to know about HIV, what to do if the condom broke, what to do if you think you're pregnant. And then it gives you instructions to text back a number in order to get the answers to those questions, as well as 2 local resources, the hours that they're open, and they're all free resources in San Francisco.
And actually, Deb, could you tell us actually about your target audience?
Yes. Sex Info is developed specifically based on epidemiology in San Francisco, seeing that chlamydia and gonorrhea rates were going up among African-American youth as young as 12 and up to about 18. And so we went out, we were actually asked to build a website, and we went out to a couple of high schools and stood outside and saw every young person come out with a cell phone. And we said, you know, I think that this is a way that we can really reach young people that may not have access to a personal computer and in sort of a mobile and private way. And so what we did from there was go and set up focus groups, and we had young men and young women from the target audience sit down and tell us about their experiences, where they get their sexual health information, and then how they would like to receive their sexual health information. And they, I would say that 100% considered a text message to be a private and convenient way that they would want to receive sexual health information. And the clincher for them, particularly the young women, was as long as they opted in, which means as long as they started the service, that they were the ones who texted sex info to 61827, that we weren't pushing out information to them on their cell phones when they didn't expect it.
Actually, Deb, that's really helpful. So when you got started, you did right thing in public health, you went to the community and asked them first, and it is really interesting that they wanted to be able to initiate process to get information, that they could get some data on sexual health on their cell phone. But how did young people learn about it? What was your marketing tool?
Okay, we did really a multi-pronged campaign. We find that you the more saturation in reaching your target audience, the better. So we had palm cards or business-sized cards advertising the service. Those are handed out both in high schools, local high schools, through the school-based clinics, and then also through just through street outreach in the target neighborhoods. We had posters and bus shelter billboards in the target neighborhoods. We had online banner ads, and we put out a press release and got a lot of press as well.
Well, the program's been up and running, so where are you today with this service?
We have actually enhanced and improved the service along the way. That's one of the beautiful things about technology, is that as opposed to, let's say, a print publication, is that you can just continually go out, talk to your target audience, and find out how they're using the service and what enhancements can be made, and then you can simply make them. So we conducted usability testing about a year into the service, and we found that all the young people who knew about the service were using it, that they really liked it, but they weren't getting past the first menu of questions. We originally had 11 questions. And we basically sent a market researcher and a youth from the population out onto the street with video cameras and watched how they texted through the menu. And from that, we made some very simple changes to the site, such that 100% of the people, the young people who access Sex Info right now, get to the sexual health information and the referrals on the service. We also conducted evaluation. It was limited, but it really it really showed us that what we were doing was working. And we worked with a Berkeley grad student in public health who went into three of the clinics to which we were referring young people to find out if they knew about sex info. Now that they know about it, would they use it? And would they possibly in the clinic that day because of a referral from Sex Info? And we had great results that were actually published in the American Journal of Public Health in March of this year, 2008. And the youth who were living in the target areas were very likely to report awareness of the service, and the youth in the target areas, with the least expensive cell phone providers were more likely to report awareness, which was also really interesting. And so we found that we were really reaching the youth at risk. And 44% of the youth, we also did street outreach, and 44% of the youth interviewed remembered seeing the ads for Sex Info, and similar to the other survey, 93% were African American, 77% lived in the target neighborhoods, and 90% had a cell phone.
Whoa. And Deb, I'm going to let our listeners ask questions. I won't hog all of your time. But your program has also started to expand, and there's actually a program now in the Washington, D.C. area, correct, ma'am?
Yes, thank you. We launched Real Talk D.C., which is a replication of the Sex Info Service for young people in Washington, D.C. We did that in coordination with the Department of Health, the HIV Prevention Office, as well as Metro Teen AIDS, and it was it's great. It just launched last week.
Well, terrific, and we all look forward to hearing more about that and other work. I know I have more questions for you, but I'd like John to actually see if the audience, if our listeners, have any questions for you. John, can you explain again to our folks how to ask a question?
Sorry, I apologize. I was talking and nobody heard me. Once again, to ask a question, you may press *1 on your touch-tone phone. Again, that'll be *1 for any questions. And we do already have a question from Ishan Polk. Your line is open.
Yeah, I actually have a question in terms of, I think you mentioned it towards the end about using the least expensive, cell phone service. And I guess I was wondering, with that in mind, many times some of the least expensive cell phone services doesn't have the capability to put in those numbers. So did you all, do a survey on what cell phone services, I don't know, in your area, Metro PCS or those kind of or the by the minute, because I know a lot of times youth use those pay-as-you-go cell phone services. Which ones were applicable, and how did you determine if they could use it for their services?
Right, and so thank you. That's a good question. Some of the carriers are local, especially the smaller carriers here.
Okay.
In Northern California. It is Metro PCS. And there's also Boost Mobile, and I believe there's two other companies that really target youth, and they don't make you sign a contract. There's month-to-month service, et cetera. These carriers do provide SMS text messaging service, and it is usually an unlimited amount that they add to your bill per month, and it's usually about $5 per month. So there's no, I don't know of any cell phones that don't provide for text messaging.
Okay.
Services.
And the what the teenager gets is it more informational? So you've not used it really with any partner notification type situations. It's just more for health information around HIV, STD and HIV?
Yes. I would wholeheartedly advise against using cell phones for partner notification services right now for a number of reasons, but the biggest ones being confidentiality.
Sure.
And HIPAA.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask. If that was being done, how did you, deal with the confidentiality issues of if they have a cell phone in their hands and
things
of that nature?
Yeah, I don't think that the technology is developed enough to be able to provide the levels of confidentiality and HIPAA appropriateness that we need within public health. I do know that many clinics are looking at it to use as a reminder service.
Okay.
So let's say you've got your HIV test, but you have to come back in order to receive your results. So there are, if a person opts in when they're in the clinic and they, you know, they've taken their test, let's say they're not doing the rapid test, and they do need to come back for a counseling session, you can say to them, would you like to receive a text reminder for your counseling session? If they say yes or check off a box that says yes, you take their cell phone number and then you can actually send out a reminder. I still wouldn't say specifically, you need to come back for your HIV test results.
Right.
You need to come back for your test results and then a phone number or an address of the clinic or something that's discreet.
Okay, and then one final question. Again, how did you indicate that the teenager would use it? How would they go about using the service? What do they have to do? What's the process on their cell phone?
Oh, you text the word sex info, S-E-X-I-N-F-O. And so that's your text message, and you send it to 61827.
Oh, okay.
That's the phone number.
And I don't think it's possible to, can you do that any place around the country?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for those questions. Sean, is there another question from our speakers, listeners?
Absolutely. Once again, if you do have any questions, you may press *1 on your touchtone phone. Your next question will come from Mario Majet. Your line is open.
Yes, I have a question about the confidentiality and the privacy. What kind of information is collected, and who keeps the information, and how is it used?
There's no information collected, and we don't use it, other than to provide requested sexual health information in the moment.
Then to follow up, are there any plans or ideas to collect information for kind of public health purposes in aggregate form in the future?
I love that question, and we really are always delicately balancing the importance of collecting demographic information so that we have some evaluation data and we can really prove scientifically that our projects work, with the community need for trust in the service and privacy. And so I appreciate that you use the word aggregate. We don't right now collect anything other, like we can search by area code to see who called in. But the issue with that is that young people are mobile, and so, you know, someone might have a 202 area code on their cell phone, but they may not live in Washington, D.C. So they could live in, you know, Virginia or Maryland or, you know, even Florida. So so that's the only information we have now. We don't want to ask any extra questions. We don't want to provide any barriers to young people getting the information they need. But there's a possibility of doing sort of the random convenience sample kind of surveys where after someone is texted into the service asking them, you know, are you willing to answer a few questions and we'll give you a coupon for XYZ. So we could do that for, let's say, a one-week period or a two-week period.
And one last question. Has that been a problem with any of the teens thus far with, you know, I guess being concerned about their privacy, someone knowing that they're asking about an STD?
Not one little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for your questions. Sean, is there another question?
Absolutely. Your next question will come from a Michael Carson. Your line is open.
Michael?
Hi, Deb.
Hello.
I'm with the D.C. Department of Health, and we're very excited about the Real project that we just launched.
I got to talk to you.
I was just wondering about the technology seems to be fairly limited right now with these options in terms of length of messages and connectivity. So do you see in the future or near future ability to have longer messages, more interactive features with respect to text messaging?
That's a good question, and it's pretty much multi-pronged. As far as more interactive features, that's already available. What you have to do is, what we have to do really is continue to watch how young people interact. So we could set up, you know, a multi-layered system, but if they're not going to get past the first page or the first screen, then it won't work. So it depends on what young people are used to. They're used to playing games on their cell phones. They're used to watching videos on their cell phones, and they are also used to listening to music on their cell phones. So those are things we already know that they're doing. And can that change? Yeah, there's lots of different features that can be added to it. SMS, as I think Rick explained really well, is simply a text-based service. It's lowest common denominator. It's like right now, it's programming for people who have dial-up modems on their computers. And so we think it's really important to stay with lowest common denominator for a while as we watch the patterns of what's happening out there. We also continue, basically every 3 to 6 months, we send a street outreach team on the street, and they ask the same 5 questions, which are to the effect of, what cell phone service do you have, what brand of phone do you have, and what features do you use, and what do you most do on your cell phones? And we have found that in the last 6 months, there's been a giant change such that 35% of the young people are now surfing the web on their cell phones. And so we were able to develop, at least for the San Francisco site, what's called the WAP site, which is it's a very, very light website that's very easy to view through your cell phone. So that was the next thing that we thought, this is going to reach a large number of young people. So we're trying to be careful and not to make it too high-tech, and keep the focus on the messages, but also be watching and testing to see what's next.
Yep, thank you. And Rick, I know you need to leave at the half hour, but when the last question about future direction of cell phones, do you have any additional comments? And I, again, want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I don't know that text messaging as it exists right now is ever going to really change that much. Obviously, there's the evolution that has happened in the last couple of years is MMS, which is multimedia message service, and that allows you to send pictures and even short video clips. But beyond that, in terms of message length and so forth, I think we're kind of where we're going to be for the foreseeable future.
Right, and I think to add to that, it's and Michael in D.C., when you talked, one of the things that's important is actually, I don't think it's something limiting us right now. It's actually just a big opportunity. And also, which is very exciting, Deb mentioned a lot of our providers with the federal grants are starting to use appointment reminders through texting. And on AIDS.gov in the future, you'll be able to get a fact sheet on how several of the federal grantees are using texting for appointment reminders. And some of, I believe some of the Ryan White grantees are actually doing reminders for people to take their medications. I want to see if there's a last question, because I recognize that we're already at our 30 minutes. Sean, is there another question?
Absolutely. Once again, if anybody does have any additional questions, you may press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Your next question will come from Nicola Juergens. Your line is open.
Hi, we have a quick question. We're located here in Minnesota, and we're interested in developing this particular service. And we're wondering if it's recreating the wheel, and if this is more something that we should refer people in our area to call out to your service out in North California. We're concerned, though, about direction for services, how to kind of navigate that, and if that's a partnership option, or if there's something that we could do to help tailor that to Minnesota or our area.
No, partnership's my favorite word. And so you can certainly direct people to the Sex Info Service, but I don't think that it would be useful
right.
In that all the resources are San Francisco-based. All the Real Talk resources are D.C.-based. What we usually do is partner with a Department of Public Health or a local NGO to set up these services and to inform us about the youth-friendly resources that are available. Our staff goes out and calls every single one of them to make sure that they haven't changed their hours, they're still open when they said they're open, they to find exactly what services they provide, etc. So all of that is possible. We're about to set up for the entire state of California all of the Title 10 clinics that will be searchable by zip code. That's in the reproductive health arena, but it's all very possible to set up with a partnership.
Great. And just very specifically, we've worked with InSpot in the past to develop that for Minnesota, and would that be a similar process where it's kind of purchasing into it, or?
I think it's been working well for us. We love InSpot Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Big old state you have.
Yeah. Yep.
And actually, thank you for that, because we're also seeing just all across the world, actually, people in states that also have large rural populations, a very wonderful popularity of texting. Again, recognizing that we've gone over time, I really want to thank Rick and Deb for joining us today, and I'm sorry for those that we couldn't get to your questions, but please do fill out your evaluation forms, and also, again, you'll get a report on today's call, and we do want you to know about a campaign called Know It. That's a partnership between the CDC, the Kaiser Family Foundation, and AIDS.gov, which is a wonderful program that allows folks to use their mobile phone or their cell phone, and if an individual type Know It or the digits associated with the phrase Know It, 566-948, as a number to receive your text, then enter your zip code in the text box and then send your message, you'll receive a text message with the name of a testing center near you and its phone number. And the Department of Health and Human Services is encouraging all of its grantees to promote the Know It campaign to once again provide people on the ground another vehicle to find a local HIV testing site. And to learn more about this Know It campaign, you can go to our AIDS.gov website, and on the left-hand side, you'll see a green button that talks about it. Just click on that, or go to a very comprehensive and one of the best sites out there to find information about HIV testing. The CDC manages called HIVtest.org. Again, I really want to thank all of you for joining today. And if you didn't register for this call, do send us an email, or you won't get a copy of that report, to contact@aids.gov, so we can send you that report and a transcript of the call. I hope that you all have a good day, and we look forward to you participating in our next AIDS.gov conference call. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.